Welcome back to the Getting Committed podcast. Thank you so much for your feedback from episode one with Taylor Wazza. I thought it went really well, and everyone else is saying so too. So today we have a special guest again. We're bringing in Nick Carpenito, the associate head coach of Northeastern, and he shares a lot of good things that a lot of players can take away, and you know what they're looking for in their players, and it's a big difference from a Division One program that's pretty hot. So have a listen, let me know what you think, and see you guys soon. Again, welcome to Getting Committed podcast again. This time we're joined with Northeastern's associate head coach, Nick Carpenito. Nick has a really interesting background in the game. He actually started his college career as playing in Northeastern, and he also was there and he worked with the women's club coach. He ended up being the ACHA Division One Coach of the Year in his final year when he was there, and then he moved on to a few other programs with Elmira and Union. But now he's back in Northeastern. He's been there for some time. You know, I've known Nick now for nearly a year, and the things that he's able to do with his program and the way that he talks about the game is very refreshing. And, you know, if this season wasn't cut short as it was, there's no doubt that Northeastern would have been 100% in the final game, probably winning that championship just the way that they were rolling. You know, I think they're still ranked third, which probably doesn't do them justice. They should be maybe a Wisco or Minnesota could be in that spot and they could be higher up. But, you know, thanks to Nick for joining us. And yeah, let's touch base straight away from talk about, you know, how you got into coaching, you know, why you're in coaching and just kind of your background in the game.
Yeah, no problem. So I went to Division III school my freshman year. And then I transferred out of there and I ended up going to Northeastern. And when I got to Northeastern, I started off playing on the club men's hockey team. And it was awesome. Like the club experience is pretty incredible just because it allows you to obviously play the sport that you love, but it allows you to have a little bit more of a regular student experience as well. So I was very fortunate in that. And of course, in my regular student experience, free time, I found myself putting myself in the rink even more than I already had. So I was offered the position after I was an assistant coach for a semester to be the head coach of the women's club team. And we had a lot of success there. The group of players there were incredible. They were great people and they were so much fun to work with. And I think that kind of fueled my fire a little bit to get into coaching full time. And I wasn't even when I graduated, I wasn't 100% sure that's what I wanted to do. But my current boss, Dave Flint, who's the head coach at Northeastern now, recommended that I apply for a graduate assistant position at a school called Elmira College out in New York. So I did that. I ended up getting offered the position. The head coach then was current head coach at Colgate University, Greg Fargo. I was there for 2 years. We were fortunate enough to win a national championship at the Division III level my second year. From there, I went to Union College and for 1 year, and then now I'm at Northeastern going into year six. Yeah, it's been a while. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, and so like in terms of, you know, you've coached at the D3 level initially, mm-hmm. and in that SUNYAC division kind of on that side of things, and then moving to Union. And again, it's kind of moving up the ranks, I guess, and now you're at kind of the pinnacle of college coaching. So what do you see the difference between, you know, off the bat, what's the difference between like an Elmira and a Northeastern? You know, is that different expectations? Did Elmira have the same, you know, winning culture? Obviously, you're winning a national championship. But what's the complete difference that you see that's pretty easy to define between a Division I program and a Division III program?
Yeah, so I think the easiest way to define the line between Division I and Division III is the scholarships. You know, there are Division III programs that run their program like a Division I program, which is the experience that I got at Elmira. You know, the players got great equipment. They had their own locker room. They had a beautiful facility and a really fun town. But, you know, obviously all the Division III recruiting is based off of financial aid and academic merit money and whatever the individual college has. But with Northeastern and Division One, for the most part, there's three Division One programs that don't do scholarships aside from the Ivy League schools, who also are financial aid based. We have the ability to offer full scholarships or partial scholarships. We can supplement the costs that come with going to university. And with that, obviously, you're going to attract a higher talented player just because we can pay for your school, which is a big draw. So, I think that's the big defining difference between Division One and Division Three. And, obviously with those Division One programs, because the school is able to give those scholarships, they're going to invest a little bit more money. There might be more apparel, there might be nicer facilities, but there are some Division III programs out there that run it just like a Division I program, and I think that's great for our game.
Yeah, no, that's great. So that's touch base about Northeastern, right? And like I said earlier on, you guys probably would have taken a really good run at that national championship this year, if all things, and it's probably, it's sad to see that it happened, but then you look down the roster and how many girls are returning, you've got a pretty stacked team for a few years to be anyway. So let's talk about, what made your team successful this year and probably last year as well, because you were a good team last year. And what is something that you guys look for, and how do you, what do you talk to your players about, and how do you, what day one of training camp, or when they come into school on the first day of practice, and if they're incoming or whoever they are, what are the three characteristics you're asking of the players, and what do you ask them to bring to the rink every day?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think one of the defining things for our team is our leadership was incredible. And, we were able right away, we had a pretty successful season the year before. And, for the last couple of years, our goal has been to get over that NCAA quarterfinal hump to get into the Frozen Four for the first time as a program. And, even throughout the summer before the incoming players got on campus, our leadership, our captains, our seniors, they did an incredible job setting forth a very clear goal and setting forth what we needed to do to get there. So they were they had a clear goal in mind, but they were very process driven, so they respected the process to get to where we needed to do. They understood that, we couldn't take days off. We needed to pay attention to the little details in practice. Communication is a huge thing for us. With that additional communication, everybody was able to stay on the same page, and our seniors and our captains excelled at that. So, we definitely had a special group. I think, aside from the leadership and aside from, the team cohesion that we had, I think, we had obviously some excellent offensive star power. We had some great defensive star power. Our goaltender was outstanding this year. I think we have probably the best 1-2 goaltender punch in the league, potentially the country. I think what might separate us from everyone else is that our depth was incredible. If you look at our roster, we were chatting about it before. We had one player that was in the minus plus minus from a plus minus perspective. And, we were fortunate where if our first line wasn't able to find the back of the net, our second, third, and fourth line were able to find the back of the net. We had this one game this past year where I think it was against University of Vermont, where they did a great job with our top three lines, and our fourth line scored 3 goals in a 4-1 win, or they might have scored even 4 goals. So, we were a good team because we always found ways to win. Different people stepped up in different moments, and I think that's a great design for a really successful hockey team.
Yeah, so I think, whenever I watched you guys, and there was, I remember being there, so I saw you guys live twice this year, and obviously I watched one time when you played against UVM, and another time you played against Holy Cross, and the game against Holy Cross was just a blowout. But I was really interested in seeing kind of the habits that, particularly a couple of players that you have, and everyone knows them, right? Everyone knows Alina and Chloe just because of their international pedigree and what they bring. What was really interesting to me was, whenever I watched them, even against Holy Cross, yes, it may be considered point night at night, and Holy Cross weren't really at the races. But, every single shift, they were still going hard. So what does something like that do to a program where, especially as a player, if you're looking at, how to become better, right? And I believe that coaching is one part of it, but also you want to go to a place where there's better players than you. And, you know, what is someone like who has been to the Olympics, what do they bring to the table? And not just Alina, because, you know, your background, you also have players that have played in the Olympics as well, who are on the U.S. national team, who have come from Northeastern. You know, I'm not sure that were you able to, did you coach Coyne? Was she still there? So you've had, like, you know, and she's probably one of the biggest names in U.S. hockey.
Yeah.
So what is, you know, what are the attributes that they bring that you see on a daily basis that kind of builds that culture and brings other players with them?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, with players like Kendall, players like Alina, players like Chloe, they always feel like they can be better. You know, they could go out there, they could score 5 goals, and, you know, they're trying to sit there and figure out why they didn't score 6 or 7, you know? And I think that's what separates players like that from everyone else, is that, you know, they always feel like they can be doing something different or something else to be better than what they're at, you know? And, it's clear because they're doing extra workouts, they're doing extra film. You know, sometimes you see players that are very talented that rest on their talent. You know, they don't necessarily feel like they need to go out there and do more stuff because they just scored a hat trick the last game, you know. But the players that are the true elite are the ones that are trying to figure out ways to get better, and that are, you know, not necessarily hypercritical of themselves, because they want to stay positive and they want to make sure that they're, you know, maintaining a good air about themselves, but they're always trying to get better, and they're always trying to figure out different ways to do it, which I think is very important. I think it's pretty clear in their daily approach. And, you know, if you have a team full of players like that, which I feel like we do, it's a lot more competitive. Everybody pushes each other, and, you know, in turn, everybody takes that extra step, and they get even more better than they anticipated that they would.
Yeah, no, I think, and again, I think, you know, I'm always looking at it in my own programs, and I'm looking at as well, you know, like I said earlier on, coaching is just one part of it, but every single day you've got to have those players in the organization, because they really drive the bus as well. And, you know, you can set the parameters around something, but if you have those players who have that experience and have that culture and that initial drive, a lot of players will kind of, you know, follow their lead. And that's so, so important, I think, with teams. And, you know, that's, I think, you know, looking from the outside in, that's also a big part of your success, and, you know, your success for at least another 2-3 years coming, and probably longer than that. So going into that, so, like, obviously we talk about your expectations, and then, you know, as an individual coach, and I remember talking the other day, like, kind of 3 things that you look for in players, and we talk about compete level and character and everything else, but, you know, if you're looking, you're going into a rink, and, you know, off the bat, you're just watching a game, what are the 3 kind of characteristics, and how are you looking at that, and how are you evaluating? Not maybe necessarily go too deep down into how you evaluate a player, because everyone's kind of different, but, you know, what are things that you're looking out for from maybe a 5-minute, you know, you're in a rink, and it's and you're just looking at a player?
Yeah, I mean, I think with recruiting and what we're looking for, I think every program has their kind of their baseline of what individual skills look like that they think that would fit well in their team. So what I mean by that is they have a specific, you know, skating ability in mind, you know, scoring ability, playmaking ability, hockey IQ. They have all sorts of, like, a baseline of what they're looking for to bring in their program. But then, you know, from that, you kind of have to look for the intangibles. So are they an outstanding skater with a ton of speed? Do they have eyes in the back of their head? Are they, you know, a bona fide goal scorer that can bury a goal, you know, anywhere from the ice? You know, are they very physical? Do they have a really high compete level? So, you know, I think everybody has their basic understanding of what they're looking for, but then those intangibles, you figure out what needs you have on your team moving into that recruiting cycle. And then, you know, from there you figure out, okay, we need a goal scorer. We need somebody to set up, you know, a high profile goal scorer we have on our team, or we need someone that will fill a 3rd, 4th line role that'll be able to chip in offensively here and there, but also will be very, very good defensively and be willing to eat pucks and, you know, drop to block shots. And, you know, so I think it's definitely very dependent program to program based on what their needs are for a given year. But you know, you can, as a coach, when I go out, if I was doing what you were talking about and just doing like a quick 5 minute sweep, the first thing I would look for would be probably skating ability. Can they get up and down the sheet? Can they make plays at a high speed? Can they make the right plays at a high speed? You know, obviously mistakes are going to happen. Turnovers are going to happen, but how do you recover from those mistakes? Do you kind of put your head down and sulk on the side of the bench, or do you, you know, maybe think about it for a couple seconds, realize what your mistake was and fix that mistake moving forward? You know, so there are a bunch of different things that we look for, but you know, obviously the on ice stuff is really important, but I think the toughest part of our job is figuring out the person, you know, and we talked about it the other day where, you know, a really important part of our team and our recruiting philosophy is bringing in high quality character people. Are what we call intrinsically motivated people, which are people that want to get better to be better for themselves, not because, you know, someone's hanging out a scholarship over their head or, you know, because other people are telling them to get better as opposed to them wanting to do it for themselves. So I would say, you know, obviously the grades too, the grades are obviously important, but that's something you can probably figure out on a piece of paper from high school, you know? So, but I think the character thing is the toughest part to figure out. Whether we're talking to coaches, current coaches, former coaches, if we have, you know, people in common that we might know, we'll talk to them. You know, that's the tough, the Twitter pages, Facebook pages, Instagram, making sure that, you know, everything's good there. Because at the end of the day, if you think about it from a Division I perspective, if we give a player a full scholarship, we're probably looking at about a $300,000 investment in someone. So, you know, we need to make sure that person is someone that's going to help our program. Because at the end of the day, that's the amount of money that we're giving them to come in here and contribute and have a positive impact on our team and the Northeastern community.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, it's really tough, I think, from a preliminary standpoint, looking at that. I remember this season, a couple of coaches approached a couple of players that we had and they just talked about how the players were foam rolling after the game. They weren't really talking about anything else. One of them was telling me about how that player, you know, she constantly asked me questions on the bench, you know, and she wasn't really talking about what she did on the ice. It was those little characteristics that a lot of players kind of miss. And when you're talking about a $300,000 investment, you want to know if that person's squeaky, you know, clean, you know, and you don't want. So when we talk about the Instagram and the Facebook and the social media and everything else, that's a big thing. I always talk with the girls and, you know, I'm not a big believer in having, you know, these hockey Instagram pages that people now have and recruiting, especially on the younger side. I think that's a little bit, you know, I spoke with Taylor yesterday about the same kind of thing. But, you know, it shouldn't just be beach pictures every single time, right? It shouldn't be, I'm sure coaches aren't just looking to see you at the beach and hanging out with your friends all the time. It's a little bit of a balance, right? And it's a little bit making sure that you're respectable and understanding. But again, if your personality, you know, has to shine through that too. You know, yeah. If you're someone that's quite reserved, but a team is very vocal, you know, and they're a very tight-knit bunch, and maybe that team lives in the same kind of quarters, but you're a reserved person, maybe it's not a good fit for that. And I'm sure the coaching staff can kind of review those things and look at those and kind of make a good educated judgment on what that player can do.
It's a great point, too, what you were talking about, how, you know, you were talking to coaches about how they were doing warm-ups before the game. They were asking a ton of questions. And the reason it's important is because us coaches, obviously goals are great. Assists are great. Points are great. But at the end of the day, there's a lot more that goes into it, especially because there's a lot of different roles that need to be filled, you know? So just making sure you're being a good person and being a good teammate. That's the most important thing. Cause you know, there are a lot of programs that are in a situation where they're good enough that if there's a potential national level player that's out there that wants to come to the school, but you hear that they're a terrible teammate. And I mean, you're not going to just take the advice from one person, but if it's a common theme that they're not a good teammate, they're not a good person, they don't work hard, then, you know, it's a lot easier to pass on someone like that and take someone that's a good, hardworking player that, you know, might not be as talented as that national level player that will have a quality impact on your program, both on and off the ice. So I think that's important.
There he is. There he started barking. What he was doing that. But again, it's I think that's definitely, you know, money on the head, because And Herbie, come here. All right, we're going to have to edit. All right, we'll leave it in. We'll leave it in. But again, so, you know, I think it's a massive, you know, a really important point that when we're talking about 4 years, right, I always tell the players that I work with and say, like, look, go back 4 years to where you were. And some of them could go back to Pee Wee or Bantam level. And just look at a picture and look at your heart. Just look at a picture. Don't even think about hockey. And look how much has changed in your body and how you look and everything else. And now you're going to go to a place where that's the same time period. Right. Mm-hmm. And most people haven't played for a team or for a coach for 4 years in their whole hockey career. They've gone from club to club. So you've got to really make a really good decision and understand that, like, and be hungry enough to get better every single year. The day you enter whatever college you go to isn't probably, you know, you're going to enter as player, like, now, wherever you are right now. But you have to think, how good can you be within those 4 years? How much better can you get to? And I think a lot of people that I talk to, they don't, as players, they don't really think about that. They just think about getting to the school and everything's kind of done and just kind of plateauing and staying the same. But it should be about, again, developing. How can you get better? How can you, you know, where is a place that's going to foster that and was a good environment? And, like, you know, if you really like, if you don't like cities, maybe a school like Northeastern isn't the best place for you, right? Because it's, you're right in the heart. But if you thrive on that, that's probably a lot better situation than being in Clarkson, right? Yep. You can't be in, like, a school where it's, you know, for me, I'm a city person. I have to be in the city, right? Like, and that's, you know, I couldn't survive very well in a place where there wouldn't be those things. So that's what I always talk to as well about, you know, it's a 4-year investment individually and making sure that's a good fit. So you definitely hitting a lot of the points now on the head. So then talking about, like, you know, I get a lot of questions myself about, you know, what should they, how should a player reach out? How should they do this? And a lot of the parents, again, drive that bus sometimes, and I try and take, you know, and encourage that shouldn't be the case, because although, like, you have hopes and dreams to your kid, the kid has to want it themselves. So what do you encourage, like, the emails, for instance? Like, I know some players that send hundreds of emails and don't get reply, and I always ask them, well, you're sending the same email to every single coach, and you're sending this to an Ivy school, and then you're also sending it to school in the NEWHA, you know, like, there's two different types of programs. So I always talk about narrowing down your list, but what do you, like, you know, when a player, a prospective player, like, I want to go to Northeastern, how do you encourage them to reach out, and how do they get on your radar?
Sure. So, I mean, before most tournaments we go to, you know, there are obviously bigger showcases and bigger tournaments that a lot of coaches go to. And, you know, a lot of teams, a lot of coaches will utilize that as kind of a canvassing opportunity just to see what's out there. So, you know, I think for tournaments like that, obviously we're going to get a ton of emails. So the best process I can say for something like that is when you're ready to start figuring out what schools you want to go to, once you narrow that list down a little bit, it doesn't have to be like a 5-school list. Because you want to cast a decent net, but you know, send out a brief introductory email. Make sure you include your graduation year. If you have a high GPA, don't be afraid to include that. If you have your test scores, don't be afraid to include that. If you play on a high school team or a prep team and a club team, make sure you include what those teams are, obviously, and what your jersey number is, because that's important. But it doesn't have to be a really, really big, long email, because, you know, for us coaches, because of the volume of emails we get, short is sweet, you know. And then once you send that initial email, hopefully at that point you're at least on their radar, because, you know, programs want players that want to come to their school. So, you know, I know for us at Northeastern, when we get emails before a tournament or we get initial emails, we'll put those players on a list. And then I always recommend after that, right before a tournament, send your schedule for that tournament. Make sure you include your name, your number, all the information. Again, just put it in the subject line so it's nice and easy for us to see. And then for us, we'll go through our rosters. We'll highlight the names of the people that reached out to us. We'll make it a point to go out and watch them, because, you know, you guys as recruits, you made the effort to reach out to us. So, you know, we should make the effort to at least give you the opportunity to show us what you have. You know, after that, if we like what we see, then that's when we'll start probably reaching out. If it gets to a point where you've reached out to a coach a lot and you haven't heard back, one of the things I always recommend is to have your current coach reach out to us, you know, because they're with different rules and regulations, obviously, you know, we're not able to reach out to younger kids ourselves. I don't think any player should necessarily be needing to make a decision or anything like that at that point. But, you know, if it gets to a point where you want to know where you stand and you're not hearing from anybody, just have your coach reach out. And, you know, if you're going to ask the tough questions, just make sure you're prepared to get the tough answers.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really good. So, like, you know, I know when we talk about emails, so some people, you know, I had one set that up or something, because that, you know, a sentence that you know about the school and the program. Yeah. Just something that you've done your research and you know, it shows that you really want to play at that place. But, you know, so what is a big turnoff that, you know, a player's sometimes, you know, an exploit for you, like maybe it's through your email or maybe it's through the first phone call, or, you know, what's some mistakes that some players have done and where they've just kind of been scratched off the list because of it?
Well, I don't know if there's one thing that happens more than it really should, and it certainly drives me a little bit nuts. I don't know if it's necessarily a scratch off the list situation, but a lot of times we'll get emails and it'll start off with, "Dear Coach Carpenito, I just want to let you know that, you know, Boston University is my dream school." You know, and for me, like, I get it. Like, a lot of, like, players are reaching out to a lot of schools, but, you know, for us, especially at a program that, you know, we focus on attention to detail, for a first impression like that, that's kind of tough. And you know what? I get it. Boston University, great staff, great school, but, you know, email them, you know, yeah. make sure that, well, actually, I'm pretty sure that you already emailed them, but, make sure that you're paying attention to those little things, because, you know, if you get to our program, or if you want to become someone in our program, those are the little details that we look out for, like making sure that, you know, you're calling for the puck, making sure you're doing shoulder checks. Those are the little things that make the difference between good and great sometimes, you know? So if your first email has an error like that, you know, just not paying attention to what you're doing, then what's to say that that's not going to translate down the road, you know? And again, it's not a make or break necessarily, but it's definitely something that's like, come on, you know, you're putting all these efforts into create a great email to get your name out there. And then, you know, you make a little mistake like that, you know, it's tough to see sometimes. Yeah. So that's the big one, I would say.
So, yeah, no, I think I've seen a few of those as well myself. And it's, it's definitely, it's the same thing. Whenever I talk about that with a player, I'm like, well, imagine you're going to apply for a job. You know, if you're going to apply for a company like Google, you're not going to put, hey, you know, Apple in there, right?
Right.
And, you know, because you're competing against thousands of people. And if you really want to be there, you got to show you want to be there.
Right.
And that's so, so important. But, you know, but the number one thing that I always like to stress home is, like, you know, you're a hockey player every single day, right? It's not just some days that you're the rink. So, Yep. You know, and I think a lot of players get wrapped up in emails and the exposure and everything else. And I always talk about, if you're good enough, you'll be found, right? And you can kind of say that with Chloe and Alina and all these Europeans and players from Alaska who have, like, definitely haven't been to the exposure event. So what is something right now that, you know, as we wrap up here, that players should be focusing on? Maybe they're not at the rink because of the current climate, but what would you say to players, definitely female players in particular, that maybe, you know, they come in and they don't have the experience in maybe in the same levels that the male counterparts would. But what should players be doing at home? And what would you say are those really, really big things that you're looking for, and how do players, you know, when coaches talk about doing the extra work, like, what does that look for you?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that there's a common misconception out there where in order to get found, you need to do everything, you know, and you find yourself, you find a lot of players doing every showcase there is on earth during the summer, and, you know, playing in every single tournament over the summer. And, you know, I think that actually, in a lot of cases, actually hurts players, especially, you know, towards the end of the summer where you're just totally burnt out. You know, I always recommend, like you said, if you're a good player, we'll find you. You know, you don't have to do every single tournament and every single showcase under the sun. If you pick one or two tournaments and showcases to do that give you the opportunity for good exposure, then you're gonna get seen. You know, so the reason I say that is because when you're doing all those tournaments and all those showcases, you're not necessarily, you're playing a lot of games, which is great, but you're not necessarily sharpening your skills, you know, and developing yourself as a player. You know, with power skating, with stick handling skills, skill work, you know, individual stuff, group stuff. You only touch a puck maybe 5 minutes. You might be able to, you might have this statistic better than
less,
I do.
Yeah, it's a lot less than
5 minutes in a game.
Less than that.
Yeah, less than that, right?
It's like 1 minute and 38 seconds.
Yeah, so you don't have the puck on your stick. And when you have the puck on your stick, you get better. So in practice and in those skill development situations, you have the puck on your stick for about 60 minutes or 90 minutes, whatever people do, you know? So that's where you're going to get better, you know? And that's what I go back to when we were talking about our players when they first got on campus, they respect the process, you know, and the process for players before they get to college hockey is developing, you know, and they're able to show their skills and whatnot in games, but you're not really developing yourself in games as much. I mean, there are certain hockey IQ situations that you might be able to develop where you figure out what plays work, what plays don't. But at the end of the day, you still have to be able to skate. You still have to be able to stick handle. You still have to be able to shoot. And you're not going to develop those certain skills holding onto the puck for a minute 30 in a game. You know, you're going to develop that in the driveway, shooting pucks. You're going to develop that, you know, going around pylons or, you know, doing all sorts of different skill development drills that, you know, you can either do at home or you can do with a coach like yourself.
Yeah, I'm not sure myself all the time, but yeah, it's all good. Like, I think it's definitely the thing where I see it a lot, and it's trying to, you know, on the boys' side with the D1, it's you're talking about a stepping stone in many ways, right? They use it as a year or two and then move on to professional or, you know, and a little bit older. But with girls coming in, you know, we talk this a lot with just the girls that I'm working with, and, you know, and we talk about just the off-ice side of things. And we don't just talk about from a hockey standpoint, we talk about from a social aspect as well. Like, hey, day one, you know, you're probably going to have some level of fitness testing. It's going to require you to be doing, you know, some sort of Olympic lift, and it's going to require you to be doing some pull-ups. And most of these players that I have, they're good hockey players, but they don't do these things. So I don't even talk to them about, you know, what the benefits are necessary from a hockey standpoint, just from a social environment, getting in there and being acclimatized to that kind of, you know, and knowing what to expect and feeling confident in your own self. That then does stem to the, you know, onto the ice, because if you're confident off the ice and confident that you can complete things that the team can set forth in front of you, you know, when you go on the ice, it's going to be easier. You're not going to feel like an outsider. You're not going to feel like anything else. And, you know, the byproduct is, of course, like if you talk about, you know, everyone knows the player that has the hardest shot doesn't always go in. They just know that they got a hard shot. And we can talk about technique. We can shoot fouls in the pucks. But, you know, if you weigh 120 and someone weighs 160, you know, they're going to have a harder shot than you. It's just the way it is, and flex and everything else. It's like, yeah, there's nothing else to it. Like, yeah, you know, we both know, like, a girl that we both know from Norway, you know, she weighs 189 pounds and she has a bomb, right? Does she hit the net every single time? Probably not. But if she hits the net, she's scoring, because goalies just aren't prepared for that. And she's, you know, and I think that's what players need to understand. Like, if you want to be a faster skater, and you develop your strength and power, yeah, the technique stuff is the stuff you can work on the ice, but these are the things that you can work off the ice right now, I believe. And then when they come to, you know, when talking about the limitations that you kind of face at college, it's like you don't necessarily have all the hours or the contact time that you need to be working on those skills when you've got pressing games coming on the weekend and you don't have as many practices as maybe as you're allowed with the rules. So, yep, you know, when you talk about the skill development is really, really, really key for players prior to getting to that college level and understanding, yep, those things. And then, you know, the last thing I would say is, you know, we look down your roster list here and you've got what would be typically, you know, it's not necessarily the youngest team. And in a lot of these players senior year, there'd be probably 23. So what is that like, you know, the state of your women's hockey and state of college women's hockey? Are you seeing more players commit later? Are you seeing them kind of trend in the boys' direction with that junior kind of stepping stone level? Are you looking for players? Do you think that development year, it makes a massive difference? And do you think there's a rush for players going straight to college?
Well, I think with the new recruiting rules that got put into place last year, I believe, you know, it's slowing the process down, which I think is really important. You know, I feel like in the past, there was such a rush to get, you know, the top freshmen, the top sophomores, that, you know, players that bloom a little bit later in their career were getting overlooked, and not because necessarily people didn't think they were good, but it's because there just wasn't any space left, you know? So I think that this is going to benefit everybody. There's going to be players that just bloom a little bit late. It could be because they made a change in their habits, but it could just be biological, you know? And I think that this rule is phenomenal for stuff like that. You know, as far as us trending towards the men's side of things, I don't think we're quite there yet. You know, I think that there's a little bit different light at the end of the tunnel on the men's side, where they do have the opportunity for that, you know, professional hockey. And, you know, obviously we have the NWHL and the PWHPA, you know, in working towards that one league at the end. But, you know, it's not quite there yet. So as it stands right now, you know, we're the next level for those high school kids. You know, so I think in certain situations, it does make sense for a player to take a postgraduate year. You know, in some cases it's development, in some cases it's just because there's no space available yet, and you might have to stay back for a year for that space to become available. But, you know, I always think that extra year, in order to mature physically, in order to mature emotionally, mentally, you know, it certainly never hurts. And, you know, it's another year to develop yourself as a person and as a player, which, you know, for some of the players that have come in a little bit older than others, it's paid off very, very well for them, for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely something that's more accepted in Europe. You know, I took a gap year and I played full-time in my gap year, and when I was actually really refreshed to go to school and start learning again. So I was really excited by it. So just from an academic standpoint, it was one of those things. And I think European people are just kind of, maybe we take life at a slower pace and there's no rush, and we don't really have an alumni kind of, or an affiliation to a program or a school because of our parents. They didn't really go to university, and it wasn't really the thing to do back when they were growing up. So it's definitely a lot different. But yeah, this chat's been fantastic. You know, we'll wrap up now. And Nick, how do people reach out to you? Like, do you have email? Like, you know, I don't know, like sliding in DMs, we talk with another coach. Right?
I would say the best method is right on our team page at nuhuskies.com. Yeah. That's where you can find all of our information. That's the easiest way to do it.
Cool. And they should just email you and just reach out and do things that way.
Email, reach out. If they are of age from the NCAA standpoint, then I'm happy to help with anything. But if they're not, then it's going to have to wait.
Perfect. All right, Nick. Really appreciate your chat.
Of course.
Cool. Thanks to Nick for coming on and sharing his thoughts. Like and subscribe. And we'll see you all very soon. Thank you.